Arf. Hounds of Heaven. Welcome back in to the David L. Gray Show. Let me. Gray Show off code and unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. It's 10 p.m. here in Germany, and we are live streaming on YouTube, Facebook, and X. But however you're listening, wherever you're listening from, I'm just glad to have you here for this. What I think is going to be an amazing show. I'm going to have an honest conversation with someone who, Rad Trad Inc. doesn't want to talk to. They just want to joke about. They want to demean. They want to spread lies about, spread gossip, laugh at, mock, make a joke of, but not converse with. But that's Rad Trad Inc. for you. Oftentimes, it's just an echo chamber. You know, we just talk about each other and use each other as references. No, but not David L. Gray. I will talk to anyone. You'd be surprised by how many people I invite on this show. You know, usually send them like 3 emails because, you know, my background is sales. You got to get the 3 no's before you stop. But the Catholics over at Rad Trad Recovery, Laura, she'll be here. She's one of the founders. After my monologue, she'll be in. Can't wait for this wonderful conversation. You know, the great thing about Dominican spirituality, the method through which we pursue the truth, is that we don't have to worry about what I find to be one of the most harmful human tendencies, which is the tendency to flee to the extremes, right? Whatever label we want to apply to that overreaction, to perceive grievances, whether we want to call it extremism, radicalism, fanaticism, the common characteristic is that they're usually wrong. They're usually wrong because in their flight to the extremes, they cut off options to be proven wrong. They stop listening to opposing views. And they shame those who oppose them, calling them names. Rather than pursuing the truth, they adopt what are called purity standards that ensure that their loyalists do not deviate from the established groupthink, cultthink, and conventional wisdom, even if it comes at the cost of harming outsiders who they perceive as their enemies of truth. This is the trajectory of every form of extremism. It always metastasizes into being an ideology, a religion unto itself, with its own dogmas, creeds, its own sources of revelation even, that in our case as Catholics, they compete against the magisterium. I think that's where Rad Trad Inc. is today. Now, those who watch my previous video on Rad Trad Inc. Actually listened to it. You know, they heard me defined as a business conglomerate, and you either agree with me or disagree with me. Fine. But those who took the low intellect route and reacted really emotionally by a thumbnail because it triggered them, because it appeared as if I was attacking their cult leaders and attacking the traditional Latin mass. Again, this has nothing whatsoever to do with what type of liturgy you prefer. I don't care what mass you worship at. It doesn't make any difference. It really doesn't. Because no one becomes a saint during the mass. Because our freedom, in a way, is barely engaged during liturgy. We're only doing and saying what the church is telling us to do and say, because in that, the church is trying to form us how to be in the world who she's formed us to be during liturgy. So it's when we're dismissed. That's when we become saints. It's outside of the mass where we become martyrs. No one becomes a saint by how well they pray or say in the Latin. Rather, it's outside the mass when we use our freedom to serve Christ, or in some cases, people serve Satan. I've traveled around the world enough and worshiped enough Catholic churches around the world to know that the Novus Ordo is doing fine in cultures that are closer to Christ than, you know, some of these secular cultures that are not. There are countries in the world right now where Novus Ordo Catholics, if you want to call them that, are becoming martyrs throughout Africa, China, Honduras, where churches are full and vibrant, reverent, the Philippines, Costa Rica. if you hear a person say that the only way to save the Catholic Church is to return to the traditional Latin Mass, you show me a person who doesn't use their passport, doesn't have one stamp in it, or doesn't not even use your passport, just turn on the TV or something. I don't know. That's a very local and shallow understanding of what God is doing in the world. So again, my call for the death of Rad Trad Inc. has nothing to do with the liturgy that we call traditional Latin. It has nothing to do with Catholic traditionalists like myself who love traditional worship, traditional devotions, and may prefer some of the ancient rites, Eastern, Western, Byzantine in my case. Some like the traditional Latin Mass, or some like so-called reverent Novus Ordo. Fine. On the contrary, Rad Trad Inc. is who I have a problem with. Because, like I said in the other video, it's a business conglomerate that uses the Marxist ideology and their principles to convince well-meaning Catholics that they're victims who are being oppressed and that their grievances are being ignored by the elite. In a previous video, I talked about how Rad Trad Inc. uses Marxist principles. Now, as I wrap up my monologue here, I'm going to point out 10 tenets of what I find to be their ideology. And then I'll bring on Laura from Rad Trad Recovery to get to their story. There are certain tenets one has to hold to belong to Rad Trad Inc. I'll give you the first 10 now, like I said. The first tenet, as I said, you have to believe that you're a victim and that you're being oppressed by Vatican II and all of its products. You must believe these things have harmed your life and that there's no way to escape being a victim than just by dissenting and resisting. These tenets I'm listing, they come in scales. They're purity tests. The more of them you hold, the more rad trad you are, right? And to be sure, every set of a contest went to bed as a rad trad and woke up the next day outside the church. All right, here's a second. The second tenet of rad trad is that you have to believe that the Novus Ordo Mass is either invalid, valid but sufficient, or if you're far extreme, borderline set of a contest, you have to believe that the Novus Ordo Mass is a near occasion to sin. The third tenet of the rad trad religion. You must believe that any theological developments after the Council of Trent in the 1500s, especially after Vatican I, is modernism. Anything that the church taught between Vatican I and today is modernism, and it needs to be rejected. That includes Humana Vitae, that includes the dogmatic constitutions, the Second Vatican Council, that includes the canon law from 1983. Anything in the catechism, we're not even going to go there. The theology of the body, I guess anything St. John Paul II did. People who have been canonized since John Paul II, everything had to be rejected. The third tenet that is in line with the fourth tenet of the Rad Trad Inc., they have their own holy books. You are pure if you only use like the Dewey Rains Bible. But in addition to that, your holy books are the Catechism, the Council of Trent, the Summa Theologia of St. Thomas Aquinas, and you must weaponize St. Thomas Aquinas against his own church at any opportunity, against Vatican II modernism. If Aquinas didn't say it, that's not true. Rad Trad Inc., their theological understanding stops about 500, 800 years ago. That's the last book of theology they read. This is why they kind of sound like low information when they talk, because the last catechism they read was in question and answer format. It didn't have footnotes or references. All right, here's the fifth tenet. Pope Francis is either not the Pope, he's anti-Pope, or is the Pope, but he must be resisted because of the modernists, right? Purity test. Here's a purity test. If you call, and this is the highest degree of the Rad Trad Inc., if you call Francis Bergoglio, you know, you're really pure, right? And resisting Francis doesn't have any limits either. You could say he should die. Put a millstone around his neck, right? Which leads to the sixth tenet. The Rad Trad cult leaders cannot be reprimanded publicly, right? They cannot be rebuked. Kennedy Hall is allowed to say the Novus Ordo is an occasion of grave sin. And we have to agree with him, agree or disagree, right? Father James Altman can say, kill the Pope, drown him, throw him in the deep blue sea with a millstone around his neck. And we have to sweep that under the rug. SSPX priests can molest children as many as they want. and be moved around to the parishes as needed. And we have to pretend it's not happening, right? Go ask Christine Niles about what's going on right now. The seventh tenet. Rattray Inc. has its own magisterium. They can rebuke popes. They can rebuke bishops. They can interpret magisterial documents however they want, and whatever they say is true. And to prove this, they will all invite each other onto their podcast and repeat the same lies to each other. Rattray Inc. is a very small circle. They all recycle each other as guests and they use each other as references. It's truly a safe space. It's kind of like liberals. You know how liberals believe in safe spaces? I don't know if they still do anymore. I haven't lived in the States in a little while. They're still going on safe spaces. This is why they all leave the Novus Ordo parishes instead of staying in them, trying to improve them, right? They always want to run to the safe space. Eighth tenet. You must repeat the myths of Rattray Inc. Here's one of the myths, one of my favorites. The traditional Latin mass is growing. Let's do some math, right? How many parishes are in your average diocese? I don't know. Let's say 100, right? Of those 100 parishes, how many have the traditional Latin mass? Two? Okay, if you have two out of 100, those two are going to be busting at the seams. It's going to look crowded. A lot of young families. And the other 98 are going to be kind of diluted. Let's flip. Give the traditional Latin mass parishes 98. Give us Novus Ordo 2. Those Novus Ordo parishes are going to be busting at the seams like young families. It's a myth. But it has to be repeated to keep the victim narrative going. Another myth. The North American Catholicism, we have to believe that that's the norm of what's going on in the rest of the world, right? I didn't notice this until I left the States. Like, there's like, it's weird how we think we're the center of the universe. There's a lot of stuff going on outside of North America. And as I said, it's depending on how Catholic the culture is, it affects how strong the liturgy is, how strong the church is there, right? Ninth tenet. We don't evangelize with outsiders. Rattray Inc. are not people who live their faith outside of the mass. These are not liturgical people. They want the safe space and talk to people who agree with them. So you never see them evangelizing anyone but Novus Ordo Catholics. In a way, Rattray evangelizes them is to make them feel bad about being a Catholic, making them feel like they aren't good enough, like their liturgy isn't good enough. That they really don't love Jesus. You really don't love Jesus if you don't come to the traditional Latin mass. What's that? Rattray Inc. is like victims in their way of evangelizing people is to make other people feel like victims. It's sick. Tenet number 10. If you're white, the traditional Latin mass is your birthright. I've read a number of essays of St. Dominic's Media about how the liturgy is called. Liturgy is cultural. It is. The best examples I've written about, long essays I've written about the Carolingian kings and the Carolingian reforms, you know, people like Pepin and Charlemagne. Yeah, they use liturgy in their version of the Roman Rite as a cultural tool to make the Franks, make the Germans feel proud of being German. That's true. I see it all the time around here. Beautiful cathedrals. And they even tried at one point in time to export their liturgy to other places like Ireland and Spain. But, you know, countries rejected them because those countries like Spain, they had their own cultural liturgy that was unique to their location and their history. So, yes, liturgy is cultural, or it used to be until the Novus Ordo. That's not cultural at all, I don't think. There's a lot of weird things about the Novus Ordo. And I explain a lot of those things in my book, The Divine Symphony. But I also write about how beautiful it is. And about how all the liturgies of the church that are still being worked are beautiful because they all bring to one Jesus Christ. So I get the idea of being promoted by people like Rattray Inc., Dr. Peter Kwasniewski, that the traditional Latin mass is what it means to be of Northern European descent. But what does that mean about for the rest of us? So should we be surprised that tenet of Rattray Inc. is why the SSPS attracts many white identity racists? But again, oh, that's the quiet part. We're not allowed to say out loud. We can't talk about that because that would destroy the victim narrative. That would destroy the myth. So I've been hearing from Rattray Inc. about this conference called Trad Recovery Conference. And I heard him playing victim about it. Like, they're out to get us. Rad Trad Inc. was... First, it was Michael Lofton coming for us. Now it's Trad Recovery. They just want to destroy us. But because I know Rad Trad Inc. doesn't do research, they're just emotional, low IQ. Because I know they talking to echo chambers, and they call it conventional wisdom, I knew I had to look into this group. I knew it wasn't what they were telling us. But is it? I don't know. Let's talk about it. Rad Trad Recovery is coming on next after this quick commercial. And I will see you on the other side with Laura. I founded St. Dominic's Media. That's St. Dominic's Media. Find us at stdominicsmedia.com. I founded it in 2017 to be an apostolate that will really help people live a liturgical life. That is to inspire people, to teach people, to guide people, to be in the world who their liturgy has formed and be through Dominican spirituality. We have some exciting announcements coming up in the next few weeks. We have some people joining us, becoming partners, becoming staff that will help us produce a lot more content that will contribute to that mission. More essays, more courses, more podcasts, more videos. So it's really an exciting time. One person you're going to be, a couple of people you may be surprised by. One is coming over from Church Militant. Another is someone who you see me do podcasts with often. And there's another person. So really exciting time. Now, this takes money. It really does. Now, it's always been a case at stdominicsmedia.com that if you become a Hound of Heaven, a lifetime member, that we give you every book that we have ever produced at St. Dominic's Media, and every book we'll produce in the future. Those are yours. Those are your gifts for being a lifetime member. But we decided, because we really have to ramp up to 1,000 members very fast. So we decided that even if you join as a exclusive monthly member, we're going to give you a gift. This is how much we want to thank you for believing in us and in our mission. So for a limited time, if you go over to stdominicsmedia.com and you become an exclusive member, a monthly member, you can receive any book of your choice from our collection. So what that means is there are several books in our collection that we've published. So, and if you choose one of the books, we'll just send them to you for becoming just a $10 member monthly. So you can select books like this one, The Catholic Catechism on Freemasonry, one of my best-selling books, and another one of my best-selling books, The Divine Symphony. You can choose that one. We'll just send it to you for becoming an exclusive member. Also, you can receive just tomes like this, just incredible books like The Liturgy of St. Gregory a Theologian by Dr. Nicholas Newman, which is an incredible book if you want to know about the early roots of the Eastern liturgy. So we want you to believe in us, and we want you to give you this gift for becoming an exclusive member. So hop over to St. Dominic's Media. Please help us. Please join our mission. Become one of our members. Become a lifetime member if that's in your budget. And thank you again for believing in us. And I'm looking forward to these announcements coming up in the next few weeks. Thank you. This is the David L. Gray Show, Off Code and Unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. Have Laura Vander Voss here. She is one of the founders of Trad Recovery. Welcome on to the show, Laura.
Thank you so much, David. It's great to be here. I almost said it's great to be had. That's what my dad likes to say.
That is hilarious. That is hilarious. I'm so happy to have you on the show because, like I said, I kept hearing about this Trad Recovery Conference, and one person was even on my show. He was talking about it, and that's really what inspired me. Like, let me find out what this thing is, because all Rad Trad Inc. is just all over this thing. They seem very emotional, and they seem like this thing is out to get them. So I went to your website, Trad. I think it's tradrecovery.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I read the mission. It seemed kind of normal, but what was really weird for me Laura, is that the word recovery was in the name of your apostolate, you know, the mission that you're doing. And if people are saying that they need recovery from something, it means that there must be some sort of pain, some sort of hurt, some sort of damage, right? And so I thought it was wrong of us as Christians, just being Christians, to mock people who's saying that they may be hurt. I thought the appropriate response was not to laugh, not to mock, write these essays and do these blog posts or whatever, these vlogs about trad recovery out to get us out of destroyers. It wasn't a victim route. It was to have a conversation with you guys to find out what's going on.
Well, I really appreciate that, David. It's very generous of you. And I too noticed that what I called it a very selfish response, because the first thought that seemed to occur to most people confronted by that information was, what does this mean for me and what I love? And is this person threatening me? Instead of, oh my gosh, people have been hurt. What's going on? Like, maybe I'm glad those people have a place to go. And I honestly, in the name, that has sparked so much controversy. We picked that name because the people who needed it would recognize it for what it is. It wasn't to slant or to offend anybody or whatever, but that's exactly what it does. I mean, that's like kind of like marketing 101. You address the audience you hope to help and serve. And so they know that you're there for them. And that's been happening. People, you know, even seeing it slammed on social media, they're like, wow, this is great. I needed something like this. I'm so glad I heard about you. So honestly, it's like, interesting how things will spread. You know, God does all kinds of work in all kinds of ways.
Yeah. And I know you're a phenomenal woman. I've listened to your podcasts. I mean, you're really smart. You know, you're bright. You have a good perspective on a lot of things. You're really well-rounded. But who are some of the other people that's associated with this? Is it just a bunch of this, like you and some other Karens from the parish council, or are any men being hurt or anything like that?
Oh yeah, we've got a whole group of people that help me, and we have men and women, and they're from all over the country. And so we just kind of connected, honestly, through my YouTube channel and like the comments that people would leave. And so then I would, you know, we'd start talking, and then I did videos with some of these people. And then when I started the website, you know, one of them helped me get that going. So he's the co-founder, Andy M. So our interviews on my channel, and he was raised in the FSSP. And, you know, so that's kind of interesting too. It's like, I was raised Novus Ordo. I didn't even go to the Latin Mass until I was in my teens. And Andy was from the FSSP, but still he noticed the same kind of disturbing trends like his wife, you know, was through in the SSPX growing up. So he's like, you know, this is kind of something that needs to be addressed, and let's put our heads together and see what we can do, because people need a place to unpack their experiences and sort out what is the propaganda from what is actual Catholicism, because it's very difficult to make sure of that sometimes. And even the clergy involved in these movements are, depending on their formation and their personal experience, they can be very biased or very blind to certain things, or even their own effect and the way they're representing the church. And so, yeah, it's like, we just need to bring in a little bit of correction to that and help people who want to hang on to their faith or see if they can come back to practicing their faith to know that they have a place to do that and people who will support them and relate to them. Since this is a very isolating experience, especially when you leave traditionalism, very frequently people are completely disowned by their family, friends, whole church community, or, you know, even just some, or it's like everything's kind of on tenterhooks, like every time they have to interact with those people because they're considered an apostate or a heretic or this, you know, lost soul that's going to hell. And so it's really discouraging, and they feel like there's nobody who understands them. So now having this online community, we have people from all over the world that get to connect and share their experiences, and it's been really good.
Now, I would understand why people would have like these bad experiences if they were stuck in Sedevacantism or stuck in SSPX, especially generational wise. Because I think sometimes those do act as cults, right? I know people that have been in those situations, in those families, and it's in some ways like leaving Jehovah Witnesses. Like you say, your family will disown you. You know, how dare you go to Novus Ordo, right? But what are some, like, outside of those cases, what are some of the things that people are experiencing that you can talk about, not in SARS antidotes, but just broadly speaking, can you describe what's going on, why people would need your apostolate?
Okay, well, one thing that happens is, especially for people who are raised in these movements, they have a very unique experience. Whereas an adult who is formed wherever chooses voluntarily to come into traditionalism, and they kind of have a background to sort of stabilize them a little bit. And so they're not as influenced, but when they raise their kids in this movement, they get a lot more of the direct exposure. And the kids, they, you know, they never know anything else. So what often happens is, because these groups are very zealous for certain ideologies and working to counteract trends in the church that they see as disturbing, they put so much emphasis on, like, you know, we're not going to buy into divine mercy, for instance, and we need to remember that God is a God of justice and that there's the four last things. And like, they drill this stuff all the time, like, you know, priests don't preach about sin anymore, so we're going to preach about sin all the time. We're going to tell you everything that's a mortal sin, and we're going to remind you and, you know, make sure that you're checking the boxes and stuff. So kids grow up with this very legalistic understanding of God as being kind of this wrathful judge who's ready to smite them, and not necessarily someone who's going to offer them mercy. Like, that's kind of where Our Lady comes in, because she's like the only warm, approachable person that they can dare to like come to in an imperfect state and be like, please help me, like take my needs to God, because he's too far above me. He's Christ the King, you know, way far away, and he's kind of scary, and I need your help, you know? So in a way, like, that's part of the whole thing why devotion to Our Lady is so big in trad circles, which I'm not saying it's bad. I think that's actually a great thing. And that particular thing has been the vehicle for people to leave that movement, because they don't know what to do. And they're just like, you know, mother, show me the way out. And then she brings them into the church. So that's very interesting. Yeah, like this one friend of mine, she was raised in the SSPX, and she had teachers at school and stuff always telling her, you know, you're not good enough. You need to try harder. You need to do this better. And she's like, man, this isn't me. Like, I'll never be good enough. And so her parents had that like red book on hell. I don't even remember who wrote that book. It's kind of an old book. And she's
I have it right here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, she's 8 years old and she finds that book in her parents' house. And she's like, I'm going to read this book because I'm going to go there someday, because there is no hope that I'm ever going to be good enough to get to heaven. So I better know about it, because I'm going there at 8 years old. Okay. So that is very common. And I think that parents maybe just don't realize the extent of this. And it weighs so heavily on kids, and they don't always feel like they can talk about it. That's another thing. You're not usually encouraged to talk about like your interior struggles or your emotional life with other people in the trad community, because that's considered a weakness and, like, you know, sissified or whatever. And so and they don't encourage usually going to counselors or mental health professionals or anything, even if you have signs of a serious problem. A lot of times they won't. They'll say, oh, no, they'll just put you on medication, or they'll give you all kinds of immoral advice or whatever. Like, just don't. Just offer it up. And so that can set people on a really bad trajectory if they have issues. Like another lady I talked to the other day, she'd grown up with ADHD and pretty bad. And her mother would have taken her to someone, but the priest said, no, don't take her anywhere. She'll be fine. She just needs to pray more. Well, she couldn't focus on praying easily, and consistent prayer was really hard for her because of how her brain was always like jerking her from one thing to the next. So they're like, well, if you don't change the way you pray and do this and that better, you're going to go to hell. And she's like, oh my gosh, the way I am is going to send me to hell. And I don't know what to do about it. I'm trying everything. I want so much to please everyone, please God. And she broke down on the phone telling me this, because, you know, she's older than me, I think. And she's just lived with this so many years, thinking, I, in my very being, am never going to be good enough for God, and there's no hope. And she's finally got out to see that the church doesn't really teach that's, you know, there are solutions for her and things. So that's a really big deal. It's like neo-Jansenism. It's really coming back in to these trad circles. It's sort of like they didn't develop theologically with the rest of the church. So if we hadn't had Vatican II, I think we would all be thinking and preaching and acting like that, because that's what they had to go on. And they're convinced that that's the better way. But they also spend so much time and energy on resisting things that they can't really advance in the spiritual life to the same degree, I believe. And others agree with me that it's very stunting, because you only have so much energy and attention. And if you're focusing always on the crisis in the church and combating modernism, and like you said, you're not evangelizing like Jesus called us to. And, you know, you're living in this fear world. It's very fear-based. They're locked in there And then, you know, you add in all the other levels of abuse, like, you know, parents who are trying to raise their kids right, so they overboard on physical discipline. So there's physical abuse in the homes. And like, I'm not saying, you know, I think spanking is evil. Like, I know sometimes spanking is merited, you know, but there's just a certain amount of permissiveness in the general attitude. A lot of these communities where it's like, well, we want your kids to behave a certain way. Or if your kids make any noise during church, we're going to tap you on the shoulder and tell you, you got to leave. Even if you drove hours and hours to get to mass here, because we don't want you disturbing our sanctimonious liturgy. Like, the liturgy is great. The externals are all good. That's not what we're talking about when we open up this discussion with people about recovering traditionalists. It's these other things. So yeah, the fear of God and, there was another thing I was going to say too, but yeah, I mean, if that gives you an idea, it just.
Because what I'm hearing so far, we're speaking with Laura Vander Voss. You can find her also online. Her YouTube channel is Miss Happy Catholic, or you could type in Laura Vander Voss. She comes up, but wonderful channel. But what I'm hearing so far is in some cases, it may not be, we could call it trad recovery, but it's also, it sounds like in some cases, just recovery from bad parents in some of these cases. But do you have, like, is there cases where people are like converts like myself who were reacting to some of the things that we see going on maybe in the Vatican, and we're hearing these people say, for a lot of years, you know, people from Taylor Marshall, it's even Church Militant was doing this for a while, kept saying, you got to get to a traditional Latin Mass. Just get to a traditional Latin Mass. And uncritically, you know, we would hear this and we wouldn't ask, like, okay, and then what? Okay, now I'm at a traditional Latin Mass. Now what? They're proposing this as if it was some sort of solution in the end. That this is all you had to do, just this work. There was little talk about grace, little talk about anything. It was just this work you had to do. You just got to get to traditional Latin Mass. So Laura, I hear you saying there's people who are raised in these situations. And we could maybe apply that to a lot of different religions. But what about people who choose to go this way? Have you heard about some of them being having regrets and things like that?
Yeah, I do regularly hear from people who especially like converted from Protestantism, and they come into the church and then they hear of the traditionalist movement and they're like, oh, wow, that looks so different from Protestantism. That must be the better Catholicism. Like, I want to go whole hog different. I'm going over here. And it has a lot of really appealing qualities, but that then they get sucked into this kind of that juridical, pharisaical, like, my faith is about checking the boxes. Like, yes, I read the Baltimore Catechism. Yes, I go to Latin Mass. Yes, I veil. Yes, I don't wear pants. Yes, I whatever, you know, whatever. You know, I homeschool my kids or whatever. Like, I believe in homeschooling, but, you know, I know not everybody can do it. So, you know, it's just like all these externals become sort of the law of the land. And then you're measuring everybody else, consciously or not, by what you choose to do. So it's like, you know, I would say it's laudable to be like, I want to do the best thing that I possibly know how to do, even if like the good line is over here and, you know, like the good, bad line, I'm going to go way over here in my good line living. Okay. Just cause I don't even want to be close to the line. I can do this. But then you start kind of judging everybody else who isn't right where you are. You're like, well, I'm doing the better thing. Why aren't you guys all getting with the program coming on over here? And it's like, but it's good all the way up to the line. Like, and not everybody's called to, you know, the same charism or the same practices or whatever. Like, the rosary is a great devotion, but it's like, I've talked to people who think like, if they don't pray the rosary every day, they're sinning. They're letting God down. It's some kind of, you know, and it's like, oh, no, like, it's good. Let's not take it too far. So yeah, the converts are like, woo, like this one guy emailed me and he goes, man, I was the biggest jerk of my life for 3 years after I became trad because I came into the church, I was all excited. And then I got sucked into this and I went, what the heck am I doing? I'm just Protestant again all over, you know, like I'm leaving, I'm going back to the church. And so he said, I think we need to get more of that conversation going about how easily converts can get sucked into traditionalism. And that's like, you say, the traditional movement is growing. It's like, yeah, but it's like hemorrhaging people out of the church into itself. They're already Catholic and it's like poaching them. Okay. And I don't, you know, not to be crude, but most people I've talked to who have spent decades or, you know, in the that movement, they'll say, like, in my whole life there, I only saw maybe two or maybe a handful of converts, yeah. adult converts coming into these churches. It's all like, yeah, they're growing because they're having a lot of kids. Yeah. And, you know, so that's a good thing too, in many cases. But again, it's even like there's a survey out there saying, you know, traditionalist parishes were interviewed. They did surveys about how many of their attendees believed in the real presence and mm-hmm. that, you know, gay unions are wrong and all this stuff. And it was like these crazy high percentages. And then they're like, look at the Novus Ordo parishes and their mm-hmm. percentages are all over the place. And I was like, yeah, but you're only getting like this tiny, tiny population because it really is a very small movement within the church that you're surveying and then adding up to this enormous ratio of like people who say they're Catholic, but don't even necessarily go to church and maybe don't even know what the church teaches and asking them their opinion about this stuff. And yeah, you're going to get a whole range because in the Novus Ordo pews sit everybody, even, you know, Joe Blow, who just wandered in off the street to see what was going on, smelled some yeah. incense and wanted to check it out. And it's like, I'm not saying that that's necessarily who was in the survey. And I know, you know, there's definitely problems with, you know, people misunderstanding church teaching or not adhering to it, but that's always been the case. That's not a development always. Because of Novus Ordo.
Yeah. Yeah. Always been a case. A lot of people, some people listening to this show would probably immediately push back, you know, just with their personal experience saying, that's not my experience, right? I think that's the immediate probably go-to. They say, I just love the traditional Latin Mass. My community is different. Can you talk about, like, norms? Like, is versus people's personal experiences, is this common for people to have these bad experiences and lose their faith?
Oh yeah, it is definitely common, and it afflicts all the groups, the Sedevacantists, the SSPX, the FSSP Institute, diocesan Latin Mass parishes, because it's not necessarily as bad everywhere. And I'm not saying everybody who goes to these communities is harboring that kind of spirit, but it is, it gets in there, it sort of spreads. And then these people that are drawn together by these common preferences and loves, they're kind of susceptible to it because they spend dedicated time in this environment and interacting with these people. And so, yeah, I'm hearing, yeah, from people all over the place about the common threads that are there. And even if they move from community to community, they're like, wow, like, this is just like what was going on over here. Or I left the SSPX, wow. and I went to the FSSP, and actually their priests preach very similar stuff. And the people are even more militant about the dress code or whatever. Like, you know, they're very, very similar in a lot of ways, which I know, again, I can't generalize that every single person, but as a whole, the movement has these tendencies, and it's partly because they're so eager to preserve certain things. It's like an overreaction. You were saying earlier that any extremism takes you to a wrong place, because moderation and like calm and peace, that's where you can really hear God and stay on the straight and narrow. Otherwise, you're going to go one way or the other, and then eventually you're going to meet in the middle. You're going to end up using the same rhetoric and exhibiting the same behavior as the side that you're reacting against. And we do see this with the liberals and the traditionalists, even, yeah, in certain ways they kind of mirror each other. And I know that would really get their dander up to say that, but it's just extremes are extremes, whatever outfit they're wearing.
Yeah. You know, I spent about, while COVID was going on, I created this little genre, or I would say it's an old playlist now, for about 2.5 years, where you remember when people started putting their masses online because people couldn't go to the church, right? And so we started seeing some strange things, Laura, going on in Novus Ordo parishes. And so I started this thing where I called it Mass Nightmares. And so I would do a whole thing, you know, just review a mass, right? I would have the order the mass over here, and then the video over here, we just followed. Was this done, you know, this little, you know, this list, you know, it's a lot of weird things were going on, right? And so one thing that people would say, of course, is that, you know, when you go to the traditional Latin Mass, it doesn't have that deviation from the rubrics or from the missal as you would in a Novus Ordo, where the priests you know, the post Vatican II documents based upon Sancro's Sanctum Concilium, you know, made these, you know, gave a lot of priests allowances to kind of do things that, you know, you aren't able to do in some of the older liturgies. So this is what you hear, right, Lord, is that this is the one of the main reasons why people would choose to just tired of the foolishness in some of these parishes and the things that priests make up on the fly. They want serious worship. They want it to look like it's a sacrifice. And that's what they desire. So can you talk about that? Like, how do you talk about that desire people have for serious worship versus how not to get caught up in the cult behavior and all the purity tests that you described?
Right. Well, and obviously we support all the church's teachings and disciplinary promulgations and things, our community at Trad Recovery. We're not promoting liturgical abuse or tambourines or anything like that. So that right there, we all really appreciate reverent liturgies and we vote for that. We promote it. And, you know, everywhere we can in our own parishes, we're, you know, encouraging that, trying to provide it as, you know, liturgical ministers or, you know, befriending our priests and just giving them the support to know that if they want to go that way, we will be there to help them. And so that is like, I think that's a right, totally right desire as a Catholic. We want to worship as the church has decreed that this worship should be a certain way. And this is what is pleasing to God spoken through the mouth of the church. And so anything that's a valid option, you know, like I know people will dislike certain things like the sign of peace or whatever, you know, and some of those things are optional to include in the Mass, but just being an option does not necessarily mean, you know, that having that as a possibility is going to lead you down a wrong road. And like, obviously we see people going off the rails, innovating and doing things in the liturgy that they shouldn't do. And that is rightly upsetting. But you still have to maintain your peace and just be like, what can I do? What can I do to help this, you know, in the church and stay in the church in the meantime? Like sometimes it's praying and waiting for an opportunity, you know, that you can step in and do something or just offering whatever you can for the people involved. And sometimes it's signing up and saying, my RCIA class stinks. I'm going to sign up to be a catechist because they're usually pretty happy to get volunteers. You know, it's like, if you know so much, like see what you can do and don't run away. Don't go hide in your little hole so you can get, you know, like you said, your safe space. That's very tempting. It's like, just add water Catholicism. Like there, now I can just sit back and I don't have to worry about any of that. And it's like, yeah, but what about all your friends and family in the boat? Like everybody else is dealing with this. And the more you take yourself off, the slower resolution of this problem is going to come. And so I do think that we have seen some really terrible things, but that the general trend is to improve the liturgy, that the new generation of priests is really, they're very fervent and more interested in reverent liturgy and singing the Mass and these beautiful things. And they're not the same guys that came out of seminaries in the 60s. Okay. Or, you know, even before, because for all a lot of priests and religious left in the 60s, those people were already professed and ordained before that. They were formed before Vatican II, many of them. So there were already many issues cooking up. And so, yeah, it's easy to just lay blame at one place, but it's playing the blame game doesn't really get you anywhere. It's like, where are we today and what can we do? So I'm just trying to remember your question a little bit. If you want to just run that by me again, if I haven't answered.
That makes sense, because we're talking about people who just want reverent liturgy, right? And they're tired of, at least in their parish, at least in their experience, just the tomfoolery going on, you know, the Mass nightmares. And what you were saying is that, yeah, that's a valid reason to good desire to pursue reverent liturgy. But what you're saying earlier is that sometimes people, once they get to the, you know, Diocesan Traditional Latin Mass or one of the societies, what they experience are these purity tests and these works and this cult mindset. How can they be at these places and fulfill their desire for a more reverent liturgy than what they can have at their home parish of the diocese, but not get caught up in all this cult behavior? How can they stay out of that?
Well, I would recommend that people just be very careful of who you associate with in those communities, because attending liturgy is it's its own thing. But it's, you know, if you're going to hang out and have coffee and donuts with all the rad trads that are chewing on the Pope, or, you know, saying, I don't know about Vatican II anyway, maybe it was dumb in this way and that way. And like, you got to keep your ears open. And those kind of people, if they're saying things that's like, is that actually Catholic thinking or is that Protestant thinking? Like, and you kind of discern who you're going to spend the most time with. Like, obviously be kind to everybody and appreciate that they're there trying to be in the church. But yeah, I think it's possible to go and not get sucked into that. But you're going to have to be a little bit careful about that the social element, because especially like in diocesan Latin Mass parishes, if the priest is formed in a regular seminary, he's usually got a very like unitive attitude. He's taking care of everybody. He just wants to be everybody's father. He's not necessarily got a dog in the fight. He's not getting ready to bolt for the SSPX. I mean, there are some priests that are, but anyway, so he's not necessarily going to be stirring up anything. If anything, he's going to be the one that's constantly fielding the crazies, you know, from each other. Like our pastor at our parish is kind of in that position too. It's like, he's got to keep the old liberals from, you know, eating the rad trads alive. But at the same time, he's like, I want you all to stay and I want you to get along and it's going to be fine. But he's just like, oh my gosh, like the people that wear him down the most are probably the traditionalists. They're so enthusiastic, but they're very fixated on what they want. And they can really sell you on it. You know, they're very excited about that and stuff. It's like, yeah, what you want are good things, but maybe there's a reason why God hasn't provided for that already, or in the way that you think. And it's just always good to pray, to be open to God's will, because we don't necessarily know what that's supposed to look like. We can have our idea, but we could be really wrong. And there's a reason why he doesn't just answer yes to every prayer that we pray. And for all people think like there's no abuse in the TLM, like everything is just the same all the time. I do a priest that I interviewed about the Roman Rite. He made a really good point one time that the state today of most Latin masses that you walk into, he called it artificial excellence, because he's like, back in the day when that was everywhere and you were, you know, just stumbling into some priest mass and he's ripping through it to try to get to the next one because he's got so much to do and there's not enough of him to go around and whatever. Like, they're doing it all the time. They're not taking all this care and having the biggest scola they can possibly have. And like all this resources and effort are not being pooled into these things on the, you know, the wide basis. Like you said before about, you know, if you had 98 Latin Mass parishes and 2 Novus Ordos, how would that be? You know, and so it's just, now we have these people are attracted to these centers and they're few and far between. And so then they're like, oh, and I love all this stuff and I'm going to pitch in and help and make it glorious. We're going to give them all this money. We're going to have beautiful vestments and all these things. And it's like, that's great. But it wouldn't be like that all everywhere before, you know, before the council. And so people's experience today is not really a standard of how it was back then. And the reason that all the bishops of the world got together and said, the first thing we got to talk about is the liturgy, is because all was not well. And it wasn't really, the church was in a new time. So, you know, I have a friend who's been a choir director in various trad parishes across the Northwest US. And she said, working with the priests was like the Wild West. She said, the priests would all have their own little, like, oh, I like doing things this way. Oh, we're not going to do that. And she was telling me some of the things that would vary from priest to priest. And I said, he can't do that. Like in the rubrics of the 1962, you can't just like decide I'm going to change that or this. And she's like, oh, well, we didn't know the rubrics. We just thought the priest got to make up all that stuff. And I was like, no. So it's going on, but maybe not as extreme or as noticeable to the people, or it is, but they're afraid to say something because they're so afraid they're going to lose that mass completely. So they'll put up with sloppy treatment of the sacred vessels or, you know, casual things or little things that they notice, if they notice them, because most people aren't really that up on their rubrics and stuff. So a lot of it kind of sneaks by, but it's still happening and it still needs to be corrected. It's always the case.
I want to ask you two things, and Albie and Angelus brought up one of them. She says, and we must be careful the podcast we listen to as we're being formed by what we hear. We want the truth. Unfortunately, we don't always get it. I used to comment, I don't know, it's been probably a long time since I said it. I don't know, but it's something I used to say all the time. I used to, you know, say social media isn't even real, right? It's, you know, it has its own space in a lot of ways. You have these groups, you have these little sects, right? And Are they really influential? So I want to ask you this, because you deal with this. You're one of the founders over at Trad Recovery. You're Laura Vandervoss. You're Miss Happy. I'm Catholic. So this is what you've been doing for a number of years. And I want to talk about your conference coming up as well. But is it real? Does people in the Rad Trad Inc. space, and Dr. Taylor Marshall, and Kennedy Hall, and I could name a few others, that they're escaping my mind at the moment. Those two immediately come to mind. This space on social media, is it really influential in getting people into these situations where they could lose their faith? What do you think?
Oh yeah, it is. I mean, people spend so much of their time on the internet, and then they'll find some of these guys and just start listening, and they're like, oh wow, like some of what they're saying is really good. And some of it is. And some of it's like really making me think, especially if you're already kind of tending towards being a conspiracy theorist, which I personally tend to be kind of a conspiracy theorist. And I think that's partly why traditionalism was so attractive to me when I encountered it. Cause it was like, oh yeah, like I knew it. Like people are out to get us and they've stolen things from us and should have had all along. And there's like a plot. This makes so much sense. I'm so aggrieved that this has been my experience, So yeah, especially if you're like, you're very primed for it. I confess to watching Alex Jones. Yes, I don't anymore, but I definitely did back in the day. So, not like I don't think there is some truth to that. It's just,
there's some truth in there. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes. Yeah. He's got a point. I know. So it's like, but it can really feed this kind of paranoia. And like, then we get into this cult thing, the us versus them. And it's the world against us. Anything bad that happens, you're like, well, it's just, persecution, because we're doing the right thing. You always find something to do that. So yeah, these guys, they get out there and they really do get to people. And I can't, really speak against the platform, because that's how we reach people, is through the internet and stuff. So I'm grateful for how it can help people, but again, it is kind of dangerous and you don't necessarily know who this person is you stumble on. And one of my in-laws even was like surfing the internet, found Taylor Marshall and was listening to his stuff and became convinced that they could only, survive the crisis in the church by going to the TLM. So then they were going to go to the SSPX, and then they had this bad experience and just kind of like totally tipped her off to like, what am I doing? I shouldn't be here. And so they left and they never went back, thankfully. But she was just like, wow, like it was just that one guy, like listening to his stuff and just steeping yourself in that.
That's interesting.
Because you have to make sure, if you're encountering these new ideas, that you measure them against the other side. What does the other side have to say? Because if, like you said, if you're in an echo chamber, you're going to have problems. You're going to lose perspective. And we don't have to do that as Catholics. The church, the magisterium is the sure guide. So we don't even need to worry about the echo chambers. But just remember how vast everything is. The amount of teaching and the universality of the church and the different rites and all that experience, we've got to keep that in mind to keep ourselves grounded.
Yeah. Christian's Prince says this. She says, I don't think Jesus Christ likes having his body fought over like this. For a long time, Laura, I railed against the liturgy wars. I cannot stand the liturgy wars. They make me angry, right? They really do. I think they're petty, they're small, they're very North American, and it's sick. But what I realized this. I don't know if you agree, that some of these people that we're talking about that want to foist their experience on other people and saying this worked for me, there, I'm going to put it on you and it should work for you. Right. A lot of this stuff just comes from people's, maybe their low self-esteem, maybe their crutch or whatever. I'm not, my degree is in accounting and theology, right? I'm not going to, don't take any, I don't know a thing about psychology, but it seems to me that people will try to convince people. They're saying, okay, this has worked for me, therefore it should work for you. And it becomes this thing for them where they really try to like just throw it on other people, and then people receive this as, oh wow, that man, that worked for you. And Maybe I should try this. And I think people need to tell other people that what's worked for them, because in evangelizing what worked for them, I think they self-validate themselves. And so they have to believe that you have to get to a traditional Lent mass. You have to do all these purity tests. You have to check off all these boxes of being a real rad trad. And because if you don't do it, yet you're living this holy life and, you know, the fruits of the spirit are evident in your life, then what does that say about me? Because I've done all these things. You know, I've become this super rad trad. And so I think it's a self-esteem thing. They really have to put this on other people. And this is one thing that really locked it in for me, right? Just the you know, I saw this one lady, you know, she went to a few African countries, and, you know, most countries in Africa, you know, these are just, you know, it's a nervous order for the most part. You do have, you know, some here and there, Latin rites, but these are nervous order Catholics, especially in Nigeria, and these people are dying for the faith. They'll show up at mass knowing that a gunman can come in there, some sort of radical Muslim, and just take them all out with a bomb or a machete, whatever. Yet they still go to mass. They're dying for their faith. And so this lady goes, she travels around to these African countries, and she comes back, writes this thing on her social media, talking about, yeah, all my whole time there, I was really trying to convince these priests and these seminary directors that they have to embrace a traditional Lent mass. Their Catholicism would be so much better. How much better can it be? They're dying for their faith. Right. But from her perspective, she's saying, this has worked for us in North America. This worked for me. And therefore, I think she was having like a challenging moment, because she's seen these people really love their faith and die for their faith. And yet they're just, you know, they're I hate to say just, but they're Novus Ordo Catholics following the Novus Ordo Mass. Yet their faith is incredible. So from your experience, you think maybe there's something to that people are just, they have to evangelize these liturgy wars because it validates them?
I could see that. And I know it's different motivations and different circumstances, but it's also true that when you subscribe to that ideology, especially the more radical it gets and the more exclusive it gets, like to the point where some of the groups will say you can't go to a Latin mass that another group offers because it's not good enough. They're compromised because they're in union with Rome. I mean, this is hilarious. Okay, because the SSPX professes to have partial communion with Rome, at least. But they say, like, but no, you guys can't go to FSSP masses or anything else, even if it's 1962. Because, you know, the priest might not have the right intention and the sacramental matter might not really be validly consecrated, or you might pick up heresy. Like, even if it's all valid, like, you could still pick up stuff. So that's why it's dangerous to go. And because these priests have compromised with Vatican II and all this stuff. Okay, so you get into these murky waters, and I mean, you become your own pope, ultimately. That's really the logical conclusion of it. So you get very, like, inflated with this, oh, I'm so important. I've discerned thus far on all these points the church is wrong, and I figured out how to get around it and still call myself a Catholic. So I feel pretty good about that. And now I can tell everybody else around me how I figured it out. But what you realize is that every single individual in traditionalism is their own pope. They're in their own church, ultimately.
So these are Protestants.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's what it is. It's Protestantism 2.0, but it looks so Catholic because they got cassocks and they got Latin and all these things that Protestants don't have as much or of, you know, I know some of them still do some of that. But anyway, so yeah, the self-esteem thing, the longer you're in this movement and this mentality, the longer you have to prove to everybody that it's right. And the harder it is to get out because you've lived so long in this way, or you've raised your kids in that, to now turn around and say, you know what, guys, I was wrong. That's terrible. Like, that is super humbling, super scary. I mean, especially if you've made such an investment, like your whole life savings has gone to these organizations. In some cases, like, people have worked in slave for years, like that huge church in St. Mary's, Kansas.
Yeah,
that community has poured so much. I mean, that blue collar community built that church because they, you know, they loved that movement and they believed in it. And it's like, they've sacrificed a lot after all of that. they have to turn around and say, you know what? I guess I need to go to the diocesan church now. See you guys. I mean, there's just so much invested. You can see why it's so hard to get out of it and why they are so anxious to prove, no, 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 this is the better way. And that's also like where you get into the grading, you know, the 1962 is better. The Novus Ordo is not as good, or it's better to veil. It's not as good to not veil, or, you know, better to pray the rosary and the Divine Mercy Chaplet. It's like, well, who needs that? You know, like, whatever. These saints are better than those saints. Like, there's literally an article on the SSPX website that talks about the recent canonizations that they don't accept. And they explain that quality is better than quantity. And they thought St. Pope John Paul II canonized too many saints. And it was just like, basically flooding the dam, kind of like, we don't need all these saints. Like, we were fine with all the ones we had. I'm sorry, but that's a scarcity mentality. And that's not how the church operates. The church is abundant. She's giving you more and more all the time. And just like, look at this, you can have everything. And we should say, yeah, that's great. Maybe I don't personally need to partake of everything, but I'm so glad it's there and all these other people can. Why can't we rejoice in that? No, we get into a snit. We're like, nah, they don't need that. That's ridiculous. We don't need four Eucharistic prayers. We only ever needed one. So these other ones are a waste of time. And it's like, well, yeah, from a pastoral perspective and an Eastern Rite perspective, and like, it's kind of good to have that sometimes. And wouldn't you rather that the priest prayed a short Eucharistic prayer reverently so he could get onto his next Mass on time than rush through the whole Mass and be sloppy about it because he felt so stressed? Like, I'm not saying that's the only option he has, but if that's why he's using it, don't criticize it. Oh my gosh, we never hear the Roman canon. Like you say, it's such a small-minded mentality. And I do think that this is where Pope Francis comes with a bigger picture perspective that freaks some of these people out, because they're like, why are you wasting time talking about spreading the gospel and taking care of our needy brothers and sisters? Things are pretty good in America. We're just going to focus on the liturgy. And he's like, yeah, but I came from a third world country. And most of the Catholics in the world are from third world countries. And maybe they're not even literate. Most of them aren't even literate. So yeah, hand them a missal and say your prayers in Latin. And that's going to solve all their problems. No, it's not. It didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, man, you're blowing my mind. I had really no idea, Laura, about just all these. I knew they're about some purity test, but I didn't know they were fighting with each other. Some of these groups about, you know, who's more pure, and you know, you can't. Oh my, I had no idea. My perspective on Pope Francis, his motu proprio and restriction on traditional Latin Mass. In the reaction, you know, the victim reaction to the whole thing, I think it played in well. I think for the people who push, you know, the liturgy wars and the victim mentality and those groups, it played well. Francis is against you, and or as they say, Bergoglio is against you, and you know, he's out to get you. He doesn't want you to get to heaven and all this stuff. But at the same time, the longer this goes on, the more I'm sort of understanding what he was hearing from some of the American prelates about, there is a deep-seated ideology with in some of these communities in their rejection of Vatican II. And there has to be something to get the church as a community as one. You can't have these sets operating within a Catholic church, or otherwise we're not Catholic, right?
Right. Right. No, we're fragmented, and that is not the unity. The church is one. And so if everybody wasn't weaponizing the 1962 Mass and using it to create division in the church, I mean, wittingly or unwittingly, it is often. And it's not the Mass's fault. It's the fault of these people who use it as their battering ram for their ideology. So, of course, the Pope is going to look at that and say, my job as your father is to preserve unity. And so, no, you can't have it if it's going to do damage. He's got to take care of everybody, not just the tiny little sliver of people that love the TLM. And it's not that they don't matter. He's still allowing it because they matter. Yeah. He could have taken it all away completely. Pope Paul VI could have. He was gonna. And then he was like, oh, wait, you know, like he was only allowing like older priests and stuff to keep saying it because they were phasing it out. And then Pope John Paul II comes on the scene and Lefebvre splits and he goes, wait, okay, we're going to try to save these people. We don't want them to leave. We don't want them to feel rejected. And yeah, it started out as a small movement and they weren't everywhere, you know, on every other street corner. But now they've grown quite a bit today. It's not too hard usually for people to get to a 1962 Mass if they want. If it's that big of a deal, they'll move their whole family to another country even. because it's worth it to them to be in one of those places. That is totally up to them. As long as it's in the church, you know, who can say that's not a good thing? But again, it's just, it gets so divisive. And yeah, they definitely pit each other against each other. You leave one group to go to another Latin mass group and you're an apostate or whatever. I mean, it's just like, yeah, I mean, like my brother-in-law grew up in a society parish where they found out that they would host sometimes a set of a conscious priest coming through town. They were like, oh, well, you'll just say Latin mass in our house. That'll be great. And when the priest at the chapel found out, he was like, I'm taking your key away unless you promise to stop having those priests come to your house, because you can't do that. You can't associate with them. And they were like, oh, well, okay, I guess we won't. So we can keep our, you know, our attendance at the chapel when these guys aren't around. And yeah, it gets very bickery. And yeah, or even like FSSP priests, like this friend of mine was moving across the country to another state. And his priest said to him, well, are you going, what Latin mass parish are you going to in your new digs, basically? And he's like, I'm actually going to go to a diocesan Novus Ordo. It's really reverent. It's great. And he's like, but he assumed, like, you know, tell me what Latin mass you're going to go to over there.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, like, yeah, the mass is great, but it's not all there is. And you suddenly become subpar because you're not there. It's just a shame. Right. Like
Things like a place in Chicago, like St. John Cantius, you think they do it well there?
Yeah, theirs are beautiful. I tell people that if they're like, I've never seen a Reverend Novus Ordo in my life, they don't exist. I'm like, well, then go look up the Canons Regular because they do an awesome job. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about the Trad Recovery Conference, because that's a big leap. So you've had this apostolate for a while. And what made you want to leap into having a conference? What was the motivation there?
Just visiting with the community members and kind of hearing from them and how, again, like the isolation is very real and how spread out we are. So you may not be able to connect necessarily with someone in your local area who's been through what you've been through. So you have this online community, but it's like, you know, it's just really important. Like we come together on Sundays physically for mass together as the body of Christ. We gather for that. There's something very important about that, being physically present. And so I just started kind of pick up these cues and I'm going, for people's healing and their community and feeling of belonging in the body of Christ, they really need to be able to get together and meet each other in person and start, you know, networking and brainstorming about how are we going to spread this apostolate and help more people. And I just thought that would be a really great thing to start doing. So I thought, well, I'll do the first one. We'll organize it. We'll see where it goes. And I expect it to probably be something people want to do more, maybe annually. I can't promise to organize it every year. But, oh man. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure everyone who comes will be people who need to, and I know it'll be really great. And we're going to do, you know, very, very honoring to God things. We're going to have mass and pray the liturgy of the hours together and, you know, have these wonderful talks and time for people to visit and get to know each other. And these people will have like these, YouTube guys that have done all this ministry, made these videos that have helped people leave the rad trad groups and come into full communion with the church. Like they've helped so many people, but they haven't got to meet really any of them. And so now they'll all be able to come together and actually meet each other, the guys they've worked with and the people they've helped. And I just thought how encouraging for them to be able to have that and see the difference that they're making and the energy and enthusiasm behind this and how people love the church and they're so happy to be home. And that's why we're calling it the Catholics in Communion Conference too, because it's like rejoicing in our communion and the healing power of communion. So.
Yeah. I saw that. That's really my first time hearing about it, you know, from a snide remark. And I saw it on your website, and everyone should go to tradrecovery.com if you're interested in learning more about what's going on. And they have a community there as well that you can join and get to know other people. And maybe even if this isn't your experience, but you like the traditional Latin mass, I think it's a good opportunity to maybe learn about other people's experience. Because I think that, again, the right reaction is to hear that there's people maybe in pain, people who experience something negative. And so the right response is not to laugh, not to joke, not to mock, not to play victim, but to say, hey, what can we do? How can I help? How can I pray for you? Is there something I can do? And or even not just hear, what can I hear? What can I learn more about? And so I think that's the right reaction. And let me get to a couple more comments. Christian Prince saying, so Saint Ignatius is a discernment. Is it a sermon of spirits? Spirit talks about scruples. Okay. Being a trick of the enemy of the soul, being unable to get the cup clean enough. So one wastes one's life cleaning the cup over and over and over. Is that something you were talking about earlier, Laura, the scrupulosities?
Oh yeah, that is a huge hallmark, classic hallmark of recovering traditionalists is terrible, crippling scrupulosity. And that's something that they deal with for a long time. And I mean, it's like, this is stuff that goes pretty deep. And again, where it's sort of like my goodness and value as a Catholic or as a person, it depends on my behavior. And so you're very pressured to exhibit perfect behavior and to try your very best. And then you're maybe not sure you did try your very best. And so you're like, oh, so penitent, remorseful. And you're just trying to always find like that greater, better thing to do to like make amends. And so it's like, again, it's this very kind of quantified perspective on your faith. Like we have to number it up, and it's kind of like that. Instead of a faith alone, it's like works alone. It can easily become that.
Well, thanks so much for coming on my podcast, Off Code Unscripted. I'm so glad you said, yeah, I'm so glad we got an opportunity to get to know you. And is there anything that we left on the table that we didn't discuss or we need to know about?
I mean, I thought all your questions were great and it just kind of flowed. So I don't feel like we missed anything really, but yeah, I mean, I'm happy to stay on longer if you want to ask anything else, but. Yeah. There's just so much. You could talk for days.
And where else can people find out more about you, what you're doing, and your apostolate?
Well, I do, like you said, the YouTube channel, Miss Happy Catholic, all one word. And I do a lot of like personal interviews of people who have left traditionalism, retained their faith, but like, you know, from all different groups and stuff and their experiences. So that those are really helpful to people. And my own story is on there. And then yeah, the Trad Recovery is really, that website is my main focus right now, and just beefing that up as much as I can and being available to people. So I'm happy if people reach out to me individually. We have phone and email on the site so people can get in touch, and just being support, because sometimes it's just that someone needs to let someone hear their story, and I will just listen. You know, happily. It's not, you don't have to come on and do a video with me. You can just like unload, because people are going through some really tough stuff, especially when it's like maybe their spouse is still entrenched in Rad Trad Inc., you know, and they're not. And they're like, I think my marriage is crumbling. Like my kids don't know what to do. I don't know how to talk to my kids about this or how to honor my husband or wife and still, you know, do what I feel like in my conscience I have to do. I mean, people are suffering serious, serious things, like, you know, or their kids are bailing on them, or they're going trad and the parents don't know what to do because they see these harmful things and they're like, how do I even talk to my kids? I don't want them to stop talking to me. And like, there's just so many things people need to process, and I can even help connect people in their own, you know, local areas. If I meet someone I know, you know, there's other people close by, I'm happy to do that, because I think, again, there's just so much value in getting together in person and being there for each other.
Man, this is so many layers. I feel like in a way we just scratched the surface of some of this. So I definitely got to have you back another time, not too far in the future, so we can talk more. But thanks for coming on, Laura VanderVos, Miss Happy Catholic, and appreciate you. And God bless your ministry.
Thank you, David. God bless you.